Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you are in control of your finances and you have knowledge of your finances, whether they are your own or they're joint or they're your own and joint, you have power.
Hello and welcome to Financials Podcast, Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I'm very excited to bring you our guest today, Kimberly Davis. Hi.
Hey, Barbara, thank you for having me today. I'm very excited. This is long overdue, so many thanks.
We're very excited to have you. So our listeners, if you're not already familiar, she is the author of The Fiscal Feminist. She is a wealth manager, a speaker, a podcast host, also an attorney. So you have lots of credentials. And so we have been very excited to get you on the show finally.
Well, I'm excited to be here. And so I have many hats and I've worn many hats. So it's kind of a confluence. But yes, I am a wealth manager by day and the fiscal feminist by night. But yeah, I created the platform as I kind of navigated through my wealth management career. And I really wanted to help women of all economic strata learn how to build their net worth and encompass all of the topics, because it's not just personal finance, right? Mm-hmm. It's how you commingle your money in relationships. It's how you negotiate. It's whether you have intentional career choices. It's also personal finance and it's also investment strategy, but it is really a multifaceted kind of game plan. So that's why I wrote the book, because the book really does give a roadmap and has kind of tackles all these different issues. And I hope an understandable way that you can apply the knowledge in your own life too.
Yeah, absolutely. You cover everything in the book.
Yeah, from A to Z.
A to Z. There's a lot covered in the book. But maybe you could take us back in time a little and tell us your story. Because when I first met you, it was a fascinating story. And I think something that resonated with me, because I feel like oftentimes those stories aren't shared. And so I think that a lot of women can learn a lot from your story, because what I often hear is, I won't get divorced. You know, we're never getting divorced. I don't need to do a prenup and I don't need to be in charge of the money. My husband takes care of it or my partner takes care of it. And I think after hearing your story, I think you'll be very happy. I have a prenup and I'm a big advocate. I was an advocate of a prenup previously, but then your story really drove it home for me.
Yeah. And there are some nuances there in prenups that we can talk about later that I don't think people realize about their income, how to protect that once they get married. I mean, you know, once you start working, whether you put it in a separate account or not, it still becomes part of the marital corpus unless you put it in a prenup. So there's a lot of nuances that I don't think people completely understand, but, so I am, I'm, as they say, a bit long in the tooth. So I've been kicking around for a while. And, I was a lawyer in the 80s and 90s. I was a corporate securities lawyer. That was my, goal in life. I didn't come from a ton of money. So I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. So I went to Georgetown and Georgetown Law School, and off I went to New York to do that whole thing. And, it was the 80s. So that was a time when I was the only woman in my entering law firm in 1983. At that time, there were maybe 25% women, something like that, if even that. And, it was an era when women started thinking they could, really make some moves in the corporate, in the world, in the employment world. When I graduated from high school in 1976, which wasn't that far from 1983, a woman couldn't get a credit card without a male signatory. So, you know, between 1976 and 1983, when I graduated from high school and I graduated from law school, women were now more and more feeling that they could, you know, they could have these careers. So, you know, it was a time of that Angelique commercial, you know, you can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, never let your husband forget he's a man, all that nonsense. And so you could do it all. Like she starts off in a, you know, in a business suit and then comes home and cooks dinner. And by the end of the commercial, 30 seconds later, she's in a negligee. So these were the stands. This was the kind of feminism that was out there. It was, you could do it all. You're going to go to work and you're going to make it happen. And I was doing that. I got married to another lawyer. We both ultimately became business people. So I became an investment banker, as did he.
Which was very rare for your, for the generation to be a lawyer and a banker.
I just
want to point that out.
I happen to have, you know, my background was international finance. And I, you know, I had a lot of mathematics in my background from econometrics to applied math and things like that. So I was able to make that transition, which that was kind of the, before the JD MBA. But my ex-husband was also an applied math major. So, you know, we both had kind of he was more quantitative than me, but quantitative backgrounds. So we made that switch and then we got married. And of course, back then, it doesn't matter whether you were president of Microsoft at that time, if you were like 30 and you weren't married, they'd be like, so you're president of Microsoft, but like, when are you getting married? So it was like, that was like more relevant question as to anything you would have accomplished. So we got married and we had three children, my three daughters who, two of whom are now lawyers. We had them, you know, 2 years apart. So at that point, because we were both working on Wall Street, I backed away. And then my ex-husband was asked to move to London for 2 years because he is a fluent French speaker. He has two passports. So it made sense. He was at JP Morgan at the time. So I said, okay. But in my journey, that was the first mistake that I made. Because it was very open-ended, and in the end, we did move, and we did not stay for 2 years. I ended up being there for 14 years. He still lives there 30 years later, and my children, my older daughter really never went to school here in the United States until she went to Georgetown. So my kids, you know, my two younger ones did go to high school here later in our high school years, but they pretty much grew up and consider England their home in many ways. And the reason that was kind of a mistake was because I never could come back until it, you know, until I figured that out. And it took me, you know, the marriage was good for a while, but I had anticipated we would come back and then I could go back to work at some point. I wasn't really able to do what I do here, there. And I
right, because you would have needed a visa, right? You can't just,
well, it, I could have gotten sponsored there after 5 years, but also I didn't have like, I couldn't really practice law there unless I kind of went to an American law firm. Plus I had these three kids that were young and I had to acclimate, you know, I didn't know anyone there. So, and he was traveling a lot cause he was in private equity. So it was kind of it was a very difficult situation for me. It wasn't like I could still be in New York and, you know, get someone to watch the kids and work 3 or 4 days a week doing something in the finance world. Right. So it was kind of a difficult leap for me. I did do other things while I was there. I had a fashion company that I became the creative vision for. We sold clothes to Saks Fifth Avenue. That was successful to the point that I just stopped wanting to do it because it made clothes unfun for me. And I love clothes. So just having to manufacture two collections a year and create. So, but I did keep myself busy. I did also help to build a big school there. So there were things that I did. But long story short, I finally, after 14 years, the marriage was starting to kind of not be great. And we had been married at that point over 20 years. And I thought, I really want to go back to the United States because I don't want to grow old here. I love England, but this is not where I want to be. He did not want to come back here. And so it became clear that there was going to be a parting of the ways. So with the help of my mother, actually, I was able to move because it was very expensive to move all of our stuff. And then we had kind of had this like loose agreement that I would move with the children because Allison was going to be going there anyway to school. And then maybe after Merrill, my youngest, came out of high school, we would consider getting a divorce, but we would work together to keep this thing afloat. And, you know, he would come back and forth and visit and we'd come back, blah, blah, blah. Well, that didn't work. That didn't happen because 6 months after I moved, he was over it and said, okay, I want a divorce. And at that point, I couldn't even, then after we got off the phone, I couldn't even access my bank accounts in England. So I had to get a lawyer immediately in England because we got divorced in England. I had to get a temporary order for him to allow me to have access to our money. And then this process of
denied you access to the bank.
He just literally changed all the passwords. Like the very, very next day. And now I'm in here and I've got rent to pay. Right. I've got kids in school. So that was a problem. And then we had this 2-year divorce case, which required me to keep going back and forth to London. And then I also had to like pay legal fees. So I had to borrow money from my dad because, you know, I still was having a hard time accessing full amounts of money from him. So long story short, we did kind of get through that very contentious divorce, and I got a decree, and it was that he was going to pay me alimony and child support until the kids were out of college, and then alimony in perpetuity unless I got married again, because we had been married for so long. So that was fine. You know, it all was, I thought, okay, well, I can work with this, and then I will go get a job, and, you know, we'll see where I land. Yeah. So I was, you know, in a gray divorce. And at that point, you know, my retirement looked very bleak indeed. And so, by this point now I'm in my, like, maybe I'm 56 and TikTok, right? So, and I don't have a lot of Social Security now. He didn't either, right? Because he had moved. So
right, you're not contributing when he's in London. Right,
yeah. So, you know, not that a spousal benefit is going to get you through the day, but it's better than nothing. But long story short is, you know, I was one of those people that suffered from the gray divorce, from not having enough retirement savings as a woman in my late 50s. And so these things were really problematic. And I happened to have a good resume, and I also was like persistent as could be, and luck was on my side, and that I found an appropriate opportunity for my career that fit into my skill set and my basket of, you know, what I'm really good at. And I was able to make that into something really successful for myself. But the reality is the reason that I started the Fiscal Feminist was precisely because of the fear that I felt. And I never want any women to feel that fear. And I also know that it is not a level playing field, even if people continue to try to make the case that it is. There are a few statistics, right? 84 cents on the dollar, 40% less retirement savings, invisible labor that doesn't get paid for, the motherhood penalty. If a woman has a child in her career, her pay goes down 4%. If a man has a child, his pay goes up 6%. 60% of people who work multiple hourly jobs are women, 60%, you know. So
women carry more of the student loan debt too. So they have more.
Yeah. Well, and they also are a higher percentage of college graduates, but they carry more of the student loan debt. 70% of mothers with children under the 18 work or in the workforce. So they have a lot of things that they're trying to handle and obstacles that they have to overcome. So the whole point for me was to establish a platform that would help women wherever they are at to A, take responsibility for themselves, feel the urgency of doing it, not letting their partner be their plan. We are adults, right? So I know the historical narrative has always been way back when that we couldn't vote and we couldn't own businesses. And if we got married in Victorian England, we had to give our husbands, you know, our land, and we had to do that in the United States as well. But that isn't the case now. And we are not going to have government policies that really help us. And I don't care who's president. Getting these things passed has proven to be difficult. The Republican Congress has repeatedly voted against salary transparency, repeatedly. they do not want that to be something that's accessible to everybody. I don't agree with that because there's no way to negotiate unless you know what people in your peers are making, and that would benefit women the most. And so no one really votes for it. So given all that, it really comes down to each individual on a micro level and a macro level in their life to advocate for themselves and to get serious. And I guess my message to women is, this isn't a someday problem. This is now. We are living longer than men. It used to be that we lived 5 years longer than men. I heard the other day we lived 7 years longer than men. So that's good. I mean, we're healthier, but that means we have greater medical expenses. That means that we're going to have more long-term care issues down the road for a lot of us, because that's just arithmetic and it's statistics. So if we are not prepared, and if we're not looking out for ourselves, then we do ourselves and our community of women a disservice, because the way that we move these goalposts is by accumulating more wealth. The more wealth we have as a cohort, the more power we will have to move the needle, not only individually and as a group, but we can get more policies that help women and help children, because usually the women and the children are together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And that you bring out a really good point, which is, statistically speaking, whether or not you want to be in charge of your finances, you will be, because women are living longer. So if you're in a marriage and you think it's okay to delegate this to your husband and you don't need to worry about it because he handles it, it's statistically unlikely that that will be the case for the rest of your life. And you don't want to learn to figure out your finances at the age of 75. It's not a great time.
No,
to
and also not even know what your finances are. You don't even know what half of them are, where they're at. You know, you've never looked at the tax return that you signed. You don't know what's on your schedules. I mean, you know, this is like, we tell our children to take responsibility for themselves, to be independent, to be in control of their environments. And so we should apply those same standards to ourselves. I mean, I understand there is some generational aspects to this, certainly with older women. The thing is, even if you're a stay-at-home mom, you are an equal stakeholder in the finances of your family. You are not getting paid, which will come and bite you later if you do get divorced and you haven't prepared for that. But, you know, you're engaging in invisible labor, and you should be considered an equal stakeholder, because the family doesn't go forward without you doing what you're doing. And I think people have just never really thought of that as an economic transaction. But, you know, marriage is very much an economic transaction. And how you commingle your money, you could work really hard and have accumulated a lot of wealth. And if you commingle with someone who is not careful, or who is up to, I don't know, shenanigans, all of that hard work could be pulled down for not by your actions, but by somebody else's actions who you happen to be a partner with or married to. So, you know, the days of not knowing that, I think, have got to be gone. And anyone who, you know, believes that they can put their head in the sand, any woman that believes that, she does herself a great disservice.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. People always say it's good to unwind, but that's easier said than done. The exception, Chumba Casino. They actually make it easier done than said, or at least the same. Chumba Casino is an online social casino with hundreds of casino-style games like slots and blackjack. Play for fun. Play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sign up now and collect your free welcome bonus at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound. Limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from Whole Foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/futurerich. That's drinkag1.com/futurerich. Check it out. I completely agree. And there's a whole rhetoric online, which, you know, well, I'm not going to get divorced. I have a good marriage. And I think the reality of it is it takes two people to get married and one person to get divorced. Only one person in the needs to want the divorce,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people assume that if you're in a marriage, it took both of you to consent to that document. It only takes one person. If one person wants out, then it's the end of the relationship. And if you don't have a plan in place for that, or you haven't prepared yourself financially or understand your finances, it can be detrimental. Because I
and
get
also
a lot of
like your partner could drop dead from a heart attack at 40.
Right.
So what good are you to your family and your children if you don't know anything about what your partner has been managing? I mean, you know, not only will you be, and I know a number of people like this because they become my clients, and you know, they don't know the time of day. They're suffering from mourning and, you know, they're depressed. This person died suddenly. And then on top of it, they are overwhelmed by not knowing what is going on with their financial life. Sometimes people realize that, you know, I have a new client who came into my orbit. Her story is mind-boggling. But, you know, there was a whole other life that her husband had before he died that they didn't know about. And things were not as she thought they were. And it was not good. I mean, she did not end up with, I mean, they lived a pretty nice lifestyle, but he had a whole secret life. And I'm not saying everybody has that, but like she, in a million years, she did not think that was her. They were
her, right?
They started going out in high school. They got married. They have two amazingly beautiful daughters. They lived in a nice house in Southern California. They, by all intents and purposes, look like, you know, the perfect family.
Where was the other life? I mean, I feel like we could do a whole podcast episode on this.
Yeah.
Where,
well,
was the
he
other
was an
life
executive
in another state.
He was an executive at a big tech company and he traveled a lot for that company all over the world. And he obviously had kind of a problem with, you know, spending money on drugs and women and porn and a lot of other things that, you know, came to light. And it was pretty startling. So, you know, here's this 50-year-old woman. She's got maybe $1.5 million out of this whole thing after living in a $3 million house and all the other stuff, but things had to be settled and so on and so forth. And hasn't worked in a very long time. And, you know, I said to her, this is not going to get you through your retirement. So
no.
You need to.
So for people who are listening, $1.5 million would give you what, like 45,000 or so?
I mean,
income,
she's
maybe
50 years old. She could live to be 100. Like when I run a financial plan, I'm running it till you're 100, right? I have to. That's people are living longer. And even if she
especially
lives
women.
To be 90, she could have, like, you know, the whole other topic that we need to think about is long-term care. I mean, I am, my father is 94, just passed away in June. My mother's 93. She's still alive. She needs full-time care in the home. She has dementia. They have some money left, but we're blowing through it like wildfire. But the care bill is $17,000 a month.
Yep.
A month. And that's not unusual. Like if you're,
right,
even if you're in a facility,
it's
the same. And so the problem is, you know, this is a real problem for baby boomers, right? There's a whole lot of us. Not you, but me, out there that may need care, you know, sooner rather than later. And if you haven't gotten
a
long-term, yeah, if you don't have a policy or you don't have a lot of money saved up and you can't self-fund, then you're going to be turning to your kids or someone else who may have kids of their own that are in college, or they may be trying to do their own thing and you're needing help just to be, you know, not like, you might not know your name. So, you know, these are like serious problems that we all need to think about. And it's, you know, the living longer thing is a blessing and a curse, in the sense that if we can't afford to care for ourselves in a deteriorated state, then that's going to be a problem for ourselves and our family. So, you know, I cannot accentuate this. And to put a positive spin on it, right? Yeah, this all sounds like doom and gloom, but really I'm just putting the fire up your butt. You know, I just want you to like wake up and stop like just saying, I'll think about this tomorrow. No, we are not going to do, you know, the Scarlett O'Hara thing from, you know, I'll think about this tomorrow at Tara. No, we're going to think about it today because it's really, really important. And when you are in control of your finances and you have knowledge of your finances, whether they're your own or they're joint or they're your own and joint, you have power and it makes you feel confident in who you are. Whether you're married or you're single or you're divorced and getting remarried or whatever, you need to be CEO of your own life. I mean, you should not have to rely on somebody else to manage that kind of thing for you. So the positive aspect to it is you are going to feel better about yourself. You're going to feel more confident. And quite frankly, you're going to be a better partner to whoever you decide to be a partner with. Someone who's not dependent and who is knowledgeable and who can be an equal stakeholder and understand things and be prepared for any emergency. That's the kind of partner I want. I don't know. I would think everybody wants a partner like that, not a dependent who is, you know, hiding their head in the sand. I mean, you know.
No, I agree. But let's talk about that. So that's something that comes up a lot on the podcast, which is, there's a lot of different opinions about like, how do you handle finances in a partnership, whether you're married or you're living together. I've always had the attitude of, I always want to make sure I have my own money outside of the partnership versus, you know, some people very much disagree with that. Like, why would you ever protect yourself like that if you don't plan on getting divorced? It's a negative mindset is what I've been told.
Who tells you that? Is this like a religious thing or?
No, not a religious thing, but that's sometimes the feedback I get. Well, we're not planning on being divorced, or you shouldn't plan on being divorced. But obviously working in the industry like you are, I see horrible things, right? I see women who go through gray divorces, who don't have enough saved for retirement because they got divorced and then it wasn't a great outcome for them. And now they're working at 75 when the, you know, one scenario I saw.
If they're lucky,
the husband retired at 55, she's working at 75, living in a rental, and he's living very comfortably on multiple pensions, but she didn't get a stake in it because she didn't have a great divorce attorney because she couldn't afford one. And so I see all of that. And so I'm a big believer that you should protect yourself in a relationship from a financial standpoint. So what is your advice going? I know you believe in prenups, but can you talk us through a little bit?
Well, so look, I talk a lot about relationships and money, and I write a lot about relationships and money. And I will say the following. I find anyone who says that this is a negative to a relationship is operating from a mindset of fear. That's what I think. And not respect for each other. So that's my opinion, because I think if you operate from fear, you're like, well, I don't even think you know, like forgetting the prenup. I mean, you should have a prenup. Everyone should have a prenup. A lot of millennials have them now. I think over 40% of millennials have them now because a lot of them have student debt. And so is it fair to make someone else pay your student debt if you were to get divorced? Probably not. The discussion part of it is the most important part because there are so many different things to discuss, right? There's how do you feel about debt? There's how do you feel about what you're going to do with the income that you earn? How do you want to commingle? I always recommend that people have separate accounts and then they intentionally commingle in a joint account. I also recommend they keep credit cards in their own name and have one or two joint credit cards so they can continue to have credit. One of my problems was when I came back to the United States was that I had no credit. I hadn't lived in this country and it was very difficult. And for a lot of women after divorce, they don't have any credit in their own names and it's a problem. So, you know, there's that kind of thing that has to be, and a credit can affect whether you can get a lease, whether you can borrow for a car. The list is endless. So this is a very important thing to know about. So again, the discussion part of it is, I think, more of a loving act than a non-loving act. I think the prenup is important because there are nuances and we can go through those. Why would you want to have a prenup? Well, one, if you are someone who is earning money, and you say, well, I'm just going to put my money in my account and then we'll decide to put money in the joint account, and that money in my single account in my name is going to stay my money. Well, it's actually not. So from the minute you get married, when you're earning money, if you don't have a prenup that the money that you earn is not marital property, then it becomes marital property. So you could keep it in a individual account all day long. It's still going to be part of marital property unless you put that in a prenup. So that means that we'll get caught up in the marital corpus when it comes down to splitting assets. Also, if you have two people, and it doesn't have to be a woman, my daughter has a prenup. It's probably more likely that her husband might stay home more with the kids than her. So in the prenup, there is a formula as to how the person who, you know, takes a part-time or a full-time hiatus to care for children gets compensated. In my case, if I had had that in a prenup, well, that would have solved a million problems, right? But I didn't. And so what happened was it went back and forth between various judges, and one who ruled in, you know, to help me and my daughters. And the first one, the second one, who was like a guy the age of my husband, who ruled and said that, well, at that point it didn't matter because I was at Morgan Stanley and I knew this whole thing was not going to be helpful. But, you know, who said, well, you know, wife has a job, and I was making hardly any money at that point. So, you know, he gave me, like, I think he had my husband pay me something like $10,000 a year. It was insulting. So, you know, you could have a formula like that says something to the order of, well, you take 60% of what that person would be making. You add their 401k contribution. You add what they would, contributing to Social Security. You take that out over the amount of time that they are out of the workforce. You can put an inflation number in there if you like. And that's the base amount that person's going to get as a settlement from the get-go of a divorce. And that may mean the person who has to pay that is going to get a little bit less in the divorce settlement when things are split, but that's only fair because the other person's pretty much been working for free for the family. So that allows you to control that number, whether you're the wife or the husband or your partner, whatever kind of partners you are. And so that is what a prenup allows you to do. It also allows you to address debt if people have incurred debt. I know people who end up getting postnups when they start businesses because they want the business to remain theirs and not part of the marital corpus. I know women and men who have gone to get postnups for that. So this is all about reducing acrimony and leveling the playing field for both partners when they still love each other and are talking about it in a loving way. When you get to the point of a divorce, you're probably not going to be too amenable to discovery, which means when you're ready to start having the divorce, you both have to provide information to each other. And a lot of times people don't do that because they're just beyond angry. A forensic accountant is very expensive. So you don't want that. And people who have businesses, like I've had a lot of people who are married to people who are in small law firms or doctors or whatever, and all of a sudden, or they have their own family business. They may not be, if you're in a community property state, if your husband or wife owns a business that they formed, but you aren't a shareholder in, from the moment you get married, you have some rights to that under the community property and probably under equitable distribution in the other states. So you will probably want some kind of, you know, recompense for that. Now, when you are trying to get discovery at that point, companies that seem to have been doing well prior to the fact that you were getting a divorce and, you know, they're thriving, all of a sudden they aren't making any money. You know, I've seen this over and over again. People who have like small successful law firms, oh, the firm's doing very poorly. We don't know. And then trying to get the documents from the company or the firm or whatever proofs they don't, you have to subpoena them. Sometimes they aren't forthcoming. Yep. So you don't want to go through all this, right? If you can do this while you're still in a good space, and if you believe you're never going to get divorced, well, then you'll have this loving conversation at the beginning. You'll do the right thing by each other at the beginning, and hopefully it will never come to pass. But at least when it does come to pass, if it does, then you, those decisions were made with a clear mind and a loving heart, not anger. Right. And further destruction of the family. So
yeah, I totally agree. And it goes both ways. It's not just about women. Cause I agree when our prenup,
no, it goes both ways for
yeah,
sure.
We, cause I, you know, I'm dealing with, especially now with the neck, you know, with millennial where sometimes the men are taking a step back financially to be the caregivers at home.
Yeah.
I think it's important you protect, I wouldn't want someone to screw me over. And so I wouldn't want to screw over my spouse. And so that was one thing that we put in our prenup. We actually did the exact calculation you talked about. And like you read my mind, but it's fair. Like
if we had done that, all of the fighting and legal fees, all of the money that was wasted, all the debt that I racked up because I was having to pay legal fees and live off my credit cards. I mean, this would have all been avoided, all the pain for myself, for my children. I mean, this was Armageddon. You know, we've come back from this as a family because, and I'm going to be really honest about it, it's because I became very successful and I don't need anything from anybody. So now, you know, when my daughter got married in New York City 2 years ago, which I might add was not an inexpensive wedding.
It was a beautiful, it looked like a beautiful wedding.
It was a beautiful wedding. But guess what? I paid for 2/3 and he paid for 1/3. And so I don't care now, you know, but that way I can still sit in the room with him. I just think he's a jerk and always will, but I'm nice to him. He's the father of my children and everybody needs a father. Even one that one could argue isn't the most forthcoming with his money, but you know, and the irony is he's gone on to inherit quite a bit of money now. So talk about reverse karma.
Yeah. So,
anywho, but the point is this, because I am in control of my finances, that puts me in control of my life. And I went on to get married again. Okay. And I do have a prenup because my current husband does not make as much money as I do. He doesn't have the same assets I do. I want to leave these to my children. And we aren't going to have children together. And so part of my commitment, you know, I said to him, look, I bought a house. I want to keep the house in my own name. I don't ever want to not have a house and I don't want to have to split it with anyone. And so if you're okay with that, you know, then that's fine. If not, I'm happy to just not get married and
not get married. You know, yeah.
Get together forever. And that's okay. And if you were to live in the house, then we would have a cohabitation agreement, you know, either way I'm cool. But, you know, the point is that even with all that went on, I still think if sometimes marriage is a good decision. I wasn't completely committed to it, but he seemed more committed to it than I was. So I'm happy to do it as long as it was done under my terms. Right. And so that's why you want also, like, you know, I would really suggest, I can't accentuate enough, like before you get married, make sure you understand the credit history of the person you're marrying, because that really can, it's very insidious and it can kind of leach into your life and that can cause you a lot of problems. So you want to know all this stuff and you want to address it and you want to do it when you're all in a good mood and still caring about each other. Because if you don't, the negative effects of it are quite large down the road.
Right.
And unnecessarily
and far-reaching.
So. Yeah, and far-reaching, unnecessarily so. So I think people who kind of have these anachronistic values, maybe they're romantic. I don't know. But I think they're naive. And I also think that they're actually not good for either partner.
No, I agree. It puts one partner in a disadvantage. And if you really love the other person, you wouldn't want to put them at a disadvantage. And as you said, depending on the generation, it could be the man or the female. Or
absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't. And
we
are
static people, right? You may start off being someone who's making less. And then as time goes on and kids get old, you might start a company and then you may have more assets.
Yep.
So you want this to be a flexible agreement that applies to
protects
each person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on where they are in their life and the way that it's set up, it shows that, you know. So it's not really about a negative foreboding of a relationship ending. If anything, it's a vote of confidence that two people can talk about this topic and still love each other, get married, right, and go for the gusto. I mean, I look at it in the complete reverse way.
No, I agree. I think that you, if you can't sit down and have this conversation, like an honest, open conversation about how this is going to work, because it is, you know, from the federal government standpoint, it's like, it's a legal entity, just like as if you were to get in business with somebody. So if you can't have the conversation, I agree. I don't think it bodes well for the future.
No. And I mean, look, we all have to advocate for ourselves, man and woman, on a micro level. We go and try, well, women don't negotiate as much as men, but in the workplace, we should always be negotiating for our salaries and our career development. But you should also be negotiating within your personal life. I mean, you know, women still do over 70% of the caregiving in families, even when they are the primary breadwinners, even when they are the primary breadwinners. And so I say, advocate at home and say, can we be a little bit more fair with the division of labor? I'm exhausted. I don't want to have to be responsible for all of these things. Let's try to have a discussion about the division of labor. That's all this is. It's just being fair, because you don't know how life is going to turn out. I did not think I was going to get divorced after 23 years of marriage. In fact, it wasn't my choice at the time to get divorced at that particular juncture. So I, like you said, I didn't make the decision. The decision was made for me and I had to be reactive to it, or I was going to be screwed more than I already was. So, you know, these things are about long-term planning. And again, going back to the original place where we started, you know, if you are the person who's taking the breaks, this is going to really have, you know, it's going to decrease your net worth over time, unless you plan for your safety net, if that is going to give you some compensation for all of these career breaks that you're making to care for the family. Maybe you're caring for a mother or a father or a mother-in-law or a father-in-law. It's not just kids. I mean, you know, women take more career breaks also for caring of elderly relatives on both sides of their family. And that is also a problem because, again, there's no social security credit for caregiving. I say there should be, but there is not one. And there's no you can contribute to an IRA if you're getting paid, but if you're caregiving for free, you can't contribute to an IRA because you're not, you don't have a paid job. So
yeah, I know there's a lot of,
there's a lot of nuances here that we, as women and as people, but I like to focus on women because I don't think enough people have been talking to women over our long, long history. And I think there are plenty of men that talk to each other and have plenty of resources. So I tend to talk about, focus my commentary to women. But look, a man can read my book. I've given the book to men and, you know, it's equally applicable to them as it is to women. It's the same advice either way.
No, but I agree. Women haven't talked enough about finances. We haven't been educated enough. And there's not as many women who are successful talking to women about it. And so that's why I was like very excited to have you on the book. So if you haven't read the book yet, I'd highly recommend it. We will link everything in the show notes. But Kim, why don't you tell them where they can find you, the best place to find you?
Yeah, I have a website called www.fiscalfeminist.com. There's no thought in it for some reason, but that's my bad. you can follow me on Instagram at The Fiscal Feminist or on TikTok at The Fiscal Feminist. Kimberly Davis at LinkedIn. And as always, if anyone has any questions, you can email me at kim@thefiscalfeminist.com. Yeah, I mean, look, I will say to all women, it, you know, wherever you are in your journey, whether you're a young woman starting out, whether you're a single mom just trying to get through the, you know, the week, especially when you're up against it, like having a knowledge and control of your finances is so important. And also trying to craft a game plan of a career strategy of ways to kind of build up yourself and your net worth is something that is worth focusing on because, you know, it will improve your life. I know it's hard graft, certainly when you're in the thick of it, but we have to do it. There's no other way to do it. I mean, I don't know what else to say except that we have to like pay attention to it and we're not allowed to act like it's something we shouldn't, you know, be devoting our brain cells to.
No, absolutely. Knowledge is power and it gives you the power to change the entire trajectory of your life. No matter whether you're 55 and going through a divorce or a single mother at 30, all of the information
and
is relevant.
You know, it's not an unfeminine thing, you know, being knowledgeable about money. This is not an unfeminine thing, regardless if people want to make you think that it is. And I don't want, I mean, I think, you know, sometimes we're our own worst enemies, and I get that we all want to have, you know, a lot of love and all that stuff, but it's really important that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can still be feminine and sexy and all that stuff, but you know, it doesn't mean you have to be kind of
head in the sand. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so disrespectful to yourself.
Yeah,
that's all I
100%
can say.
Agree. Well, this is amazing. I'm so excited to finally have you on the show. I can't wait to share all of this great information with our listeners. And I will personally never forget your story and advice. And so thank you so much for coming on and sharing with everybody.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And, you know, just say yes to being CEO of your own life. It's awesome. And like, there's nothing like financial independence and freedom to be able to make your own decisions.
I completely agree. For all of our lovely listeners, you can find us on Instagram at Future Rich Podcast and our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest. There's something so thrilling about playing Chumba Casino. Maybe it's the simple reminder that with a little luck, anything is possible. ChumbaCasino.com has hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new game releases each week. Play for free anytime, anywhere for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.